world-famous Phil Henry Show. This hour, we'll talk about a leopard that has been isolated, and they're attempting to tranquilize this animal in the town of Meerut, India, a town that is apparently thousands of years old in the Indus Valley, and they got a leopard problem there. And this animal is loose, and it's apparently it's injured several people, and they still haven't been able to do anything with it. The last thing that I heard about this was that it was somehow isolated. It had made its way into a hospital, and they had it in a room, and they were trying to tranquilize it, but they didn't get three darts into it, only two. And I don't know.
Well, it sounds like some kind of super leopard.
Yeah, it sounds like it does anything.
Well, are they still messing around with this damn thing? Why don't they just blow it away?
Yeah, they're trying to be humane, and it ain't working, man. Seven people injured by this leopard. See, this is the thing about animals. Anyway, we tried to get on the line here, George Havanaugh, who's with the Primate Center in Mississippi, because Bud thought that would be a great guy to talk to about leopards. Okay? That didn't work out. Then I think we had somebody, I don't know who the hell else we got. What do you got now?
Well, get on Dr. Larry Grover.
Dr. Larry Grover?
Well, he's not maybe Larry Grover.
Larry Grover will come on to talk about the leopard in... Why Larry Grover? That guy's with conservatives of Kern County.
That's he said, if he would talk about a leopard.
Wait a minute, bud. This is the problem I got into the first hour, man, when we talked to some guy who was a primate expert, and he didn't know his ass from a hole in the ground about leopards.
Well, Larry Grover said he knows about it.
No, man,
Will you want to talk to him or not?
Yeah, as long as you got him lined up, I might as well, sure. Harold Ramis, the director of very, very funny movies and a cast member, I think, for a time with Saturday Night Live, died Monday, today. He was 69 years of age. He suffered from autoimmune inflammatory vasculitis. One of more than 15 rare autoimmune diseases that can often be difficult to diagnose. He died from complications of the disease. He battled complications from this disease for years, according to his agent, UTA, which represented him. The agency said he died at home in the Chicago suburbs, surrounded by his family and friends. Harold Ramis was really a beloved member of the entertainment community because of the fact that he was a talented performer. But he was also a very talented director and was the brains behind, the directorial brains, I think, behind the film Groundhog Day, which to this day, that movie strikes me as such a easy, very simple premise and entirely compelling. And, of course, it's a very, very compelling premise in that what if you had the same day to live over and over again, you'd eventually get it right in ways that you probably, you know, can't imagine.
Well, and the thing about Groundhog Day was that the character of Bill Murray did all the self-indulgent things only to come to the realization that it was better to just be kind to people.
What? That's not what I saw.
Well, what did you see, Bud?
It was, but it was still fun to rob a bank and stuff.
It was fun to rob a bank for a while, but then he got sick and tired of it.
Yeah, he did all that stuff. He did all the goofy stuff, remember?
What?
He did all that. He robbed that Brinks truck. He went out with the chick that he always wanted to go out with. Went out with her God knows how many times. He dressed up like Clint Eastwood. Remember all the goofy stuff? But the one thing that he couldn't get right was the girl that he was really attracted to.
Yeah, she was the television station employee that went with him.
Yes, the producer.
Yeah, like the on-site producer, the Andy McDowell character.
Who's she?
The one that he had the hots for, man. Did you see the movie?
Yeah, I saw it. Oh, yeah, the curly-haired girl.
Right, the curly-haired girl, whatever. So anyway, Harold Ramis, a writer, director, and actor whose boisterous but sly silliness helped catapult comedies like Groundhog Day, Ghostbusters, Animal House. We forget about Animal House. That film was hysterical. And Caddyshack, to commercial and critical success, died on Monday in a Chicago area home. He was 69. The case, as we mentioned, or the cause, rather, was the autoimmune inflammatory vasculitis, a disease that involves the swelling of blood vessels, according to Chris Day, who is a spokesman for UTA. Mr. Ramis was a master at creating hilarious plots and scenes peopled by indelible characters, among them a groundskeeper obsessed with a gopher in Caddyshack.
That was Groundhog Day.
No, it was Caddyshack.
It was Caddyshack.
Okay, the guy's obsessed with a gopher?
Yeah, what are you saying?
That's got to be Groundhog Day.
Was it called Gopher Day or Groundhog Day?
Well, I mean, what difference does it make?
Well, it would be called Gopher Day if it was the gopher.
But you didn't see these movies, man. You didn't see these movies. Otherwise, you'd know what you're talking about.
I didn't see Gopher Day, no.
It ain't Gopher Day, man. It's Groundhog Day. You didn't see that, and you didn't see Caddyshack.
No, I didn't.
Which one did you see?
Ghostbusters.
Well, then don't talk, man, because you don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, among them, the groundskeeper obsessed with a gopher, fraternity brothers at war with a college dean, which, of course, was Animal House, and a jaded weatherman condemned to living the same day over and over again, Groundhog Day, until, you know, he eventually gets it right, and that was Groundhog Day. More than anyone else, said Paul Weingarten, writing in the Chicago Tribune, Harold Ramis has shaped this generation's ideas of what is funny. He was writing in 1983, and I would say that's absolutely true, because all of those films were baby boomer hits. And to Mr. Ramis, the fact was that comedy is inherently subversive. We represent the underdog, as comedy usually speaks for the lower classes, Mr. Ramis said. We attack the winners. Mr. Ramis collaborated with the people who came to be considered the royalty of comedy in the 1970s and 80s, notably from the first generation cast of Saturday Night Live, including John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, and Gilda Radner. His breakthrough came in 1978 when he joined Douglas Kenny and Chris Miller to write National Lampoon's Animal House, which starred Mr. Belushi and broke the box office record for comedies at that time. With Mr. Aykroyd, he went on to write Ghostbusters in 1984 and Ghostbusters 2 in 1989, playing the super intellectual Dr. Egan Spengler in Tales of a Squad of New York City Contractors Specializing in Ghost Removal.
Well, it's funny the way you... Yes, when you put it that way, it's funny, but I knew a lot of people that were hurt by that movie, Phil. A lot of people.
What are you talking about, Margaret?
Well, I'll tell you what I was speaking to Phil. That's funny. You sound like General Shaw.
I'm here, Margaret. I'm listening to you.
I'm asking you, what are you talking about?
I'll tell you what I'm talking about. I knew a lot of people that had very, very valuable properties on the Upper East Side, and much of that film turned those properties into, it rhymes with the word, sit.
Oh, you're talking about...
Okay, I think we know. Turned those properties into what?
I had a girlfriend who had a very valuable property there. She had a high-rise right on the park, right on Central Park. And after Ramis came in with his crew, and they did their little funny movie, and comedically defecated all over everyone there. Comedically, figuratively. But figuratively, Harold Ramis defecated over every single person residing in many of those exclusive properties. I just think that what he did was wrong.
Well, that right there is what he said.
He said he did that?
Yes, he said he'd do that.
He said he did that?
He did that.
He did what? He crapped all over the rich?
Well...
Because that's what he said in that quote. He said that we're subversive. Comedy's subversive.
Does that mean you come into a very, very... You come into a community of very hardworking people, or people, yes, who work hard. They came into their money by way of a trust. Just push that aside for a moment. If they got their money by way of a trust or an inheritance, okay, fine, but they work hard... And they worked relatively hard. And to have Harold Ramis come in, squat, and defecate on them, and very, very expensive furnishings and...
Well, all right. Can we speak well of those who have passed on, Margaret? Harold Ramis is not with us anymore.
I understand that. I understand that. And I know he's a very talented man. But I had a girlfriend and her husband, both of them, very expensive furnishings, on an Upper East Side, beautiful townhome. And when Ghostbusters was done,
I know. He came in, squatted, and defecated all over their fine efforts.
Phil, you know, you can be a smartass only so far, and then you've got to answer for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that sounds threatening.
No.
Well, we'll take a break and continue with the story here. An interesting story, one that should be told, the obituary, if you will, the life and times of Harold Ramis, the great movies that he directed, the funny, funny images and characters that he left with us. World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com and online. Tune in, and we're on our website, mobile, so you can listen to us live right now, mobile, on either the Phil Hendry website or tune in. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So we're eulogizing here Harold Ramis, and we were talking about how his movies were representative of a generation. You know, there's a lot of baby boomers, and I'm the first person to say that we've gotten far more press than we deserve. And I really believe that. I think that baby boomers have a lot to answer for. Baby boomers are and were great at talking about what a big generation we have been and how influential we have been. But, you know, there's a whole lot that we screwed up. And one of them, in my opinion, one of the areas where we've messed up bad is as parents and as grandparents, disgraceful generation when it comes to that. I'm just being honest.
How can you say that about a generation that created...
What, the Beatles? So?
I'd like to see your generation create the Beatles.
Oh, well, whatever, okay? I mean, that's fine. But nonetheless... Harold Ramis was there through it all, through all of the hubris, through all of the defeats and all of it. He was there commenting on all of it with his movies. And they were great films. So we were talking about, you know, films like Ghostbusters. You were just saying that Harold Ramis drove the property values down for your friends. I had no idea that Ghostbusters had that kind of an impact.
Well, I had a girlfriend and a husband that couldn't get rid of their home for lover money because of the idiots that came out of the woodwork after the Ghostbusters, believe it or not.
So there were people who wouldn't buy because they thought there were ghosts?
They didn't want to have to even deal with it. You have to understand, these are very sophisticated people. Obviously, they have money. These are not people that believe in ghosts, Phil. But you want to be on the safe side, and you don't want to have to walk into a situation you're going to regret. Now,
how sophisticated and smart can anybody be when they have to, well, just in case there are ghosts, I better not buy that.
So what are you saying?
Yeah, because they believe in ghosts.
I'm not asking you.
I agree with Bud. I'm saying they believe in ghosts to the point where they don't want to buy a house.
Phil, let me ask you a question, may I?
Go ahead.
Would you buy a home where a murder had been committed?
If I wanted the home, yes.
Oh, bull crap.
Wait, I'm telling you, if I wanted the home, yes, I would.
Are you trying to tell me, and I don't believe in ghosts either, but the spook, you're telling me that you don't think a spook?
Well, you gotta be careful.
I'm talking about a ghost, all right?
No, General, I don't. I don't. I don't believe in that whole jive thing, no.
I think you're lying. I think you're trying to sound like a big shot.
Wait. Are you telling me that you wouldn't?
I would know. I would be very uncomfortable.
Why?
Knowing that something like that had happened in a home that I was living in, I'd be very uncomfortable.
So it happened. So what? What? You mean it would be better if you didn't know it?
If I didn't know it, yes.
So your mind, you would allow that to mess with your mind?
No.
The fact that it did happen, that there was a guy that got killed in there...
Yes, and that would be reverberating. I don't believe in ghosts, but you don't believe I'm not saying a ghost, but you don't believe the spook of the guy.
No, what about the spook of the guy that got killed?
The spook of the guy that got killed. You talk about the ghost?
Yeah, but a spook is a more potent one.
Yes.
Oh, you guys have got to be high on some kind of a narcotic that I've not heard of. The spook is a more
I didn't say more important, I said potent.
Oh, my God, Phil, you don't even... Well, you think we said impotent? Robert, that's a slam on you.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, what are you trying to say?
Wait a minute, will you, for 5 seconds. Are you telling me that, well, I know what you're telling me, and I don't buy it. You're telling me that you're the spook of the guy that got... Let me ask you this, okay?
No, Phil, you don't understand.
No. Let me ask you this. You know, the house that you live in, and the property you live in, whether it's an apartment, whether it's a house, whatever, you don't know what has happened there. You have no idea. From before they built the house. You remember in Poltergeist, they built it on that cemetery?
Well, that was... they never should have done that.
Well, they never should have done that. Is that right? Why? Because the spook of the people that were living...
You know, Phil, I'm glad you're pretending like it doesn't freak you out.
No, I'm telling you that I don't believe in that kind of thing. I'm not saying I don't believe in an afterlife. I'm not saying that I don't believe in spirits. But I will tell you right now that a murder, while a horrible thing, is no different in terms of its after effects or its life than somebody stubbing their toe, making love, the birth of a baby. It's important to the people's lives involved. It's important to the people whose lives are affected beyond that. It's important to the extant time. It's not important to me now. A baby being born in that room. What about that? Would that make it groovier or something?
Well, what do you mean groovier? Are you trying to mess with me?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying. If there had been a murder committed, but then a baby was born.
What about a baby was committed?
No.
A baby was committed?
Well, that's what you said.
No, I said a baby being born.
If there's a baby being committed, I'd love to see that one.
Yeah. That'd be a first.
Yeah, well, guess what? I never said that, so you guys are thinking about something that's really weird. So the point is, a baby being born, wouldn't that wipe out the weirdness of somebody being murdered? Or does the spook of the guy that, Jesus.
You know, Phil, you can laugh all you want, and you can pretend like it doesn't freak you out, but if you were trying to get some sleep in a room where a man had been gruesomely, dispatched... With a series of Ginsu knives, okay?
Yeah.
Oh, look at him pretending like it doesn't bother him.
That doesn't bother you?
No, man. What do you guys want from me? You know, here's where it would bother me. If I knew that some of the blood and some of the, if it was still in the carpeting, I'd probably want the carpeting cleaned up. I wouldn't want that there. That's about as weird as I would get about that. But if it was a house I really wanted, yeah. See, what I'm trying to say is, like, we know that a lot of stuff has happened down through the centuries. How do you know that where you live right now, some band of Native Americans didn't do battle and just carved each other up, man? Just chopped off heads, scalped, you know?
Phil, you're talking about the Native American people essentially peace-loving. You're saying what? Are you saying now that they had wars before the white man got here? Wow, what a racist thing to say.
Yeah.
What are you... Are you trying to tell me that the Native people did not have wars among each other?
I'm not saying they didn't have... They had disagreements, yes. But the butchery, that was the white man.
Well, Margaret, I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but war between humans, whether they were Europeans on natives or Native versus Native, it's been going on since the beginning of time. And the Native Americans that went to war against each other were absolutely barbaric, just as barbaric as any European. Scalpings, enslavement, murder, you name it, man. Torture? Are you kidding me?
Where did you hear all of this?
Where did I hear all of this? This is an absolute history. It is a real history of North America and the peoples that have lived here for the last 13,000 years.
Well, Phil, I would love to see your source material.
I would, too, because I heard you interview that wonderful Native American man... with the National, the Indian Association. His name was what, Running Bear or something?
Yeah.
What was his name, Phil? Running, the Indian.
Russell Means?
That's it, Russell Means.
Running Bear.
Well, and he said that Indians didn't...
I don't remember Mr. Means saying that. I remember him saying that Native people had been here like 100,000 years, which I didn't dare disagree with him on because he's a very formidable guy and was probably just going to get really mad at me. But what would that do?
Oh, so you chickened out, huh?
Well, there was no point in arguing with the guy. I wasn't going to argue with the cat. Okay.
Oh, the cat.
Look, Margaret, Miss I Love Native Americans, I'm sure Running Bear, we can get back on the show, and he can talk to you about it.
I got his name wrong. Big whoop.
So we'll be back here on Would You Buy a House Where Indians Had Been Scalping Each Other 2,000 Years Ago? World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
In the same house?
The house presumably had never been, had not yet been built, you know?
What?
We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
We won't be right back.
Yes, we will.
No, we won't.
Yes, we will. Famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. This is a band called Lacuna Coil. I like these guys, but in the middle of this song, they're speaking some kind of...
I think it's Portuguese.
Portuguese, I don't know. But Nikki was just saying that her boyfriend Curtis went and saw them, and he's had his birthday this week, and so he's just having... He's got Nikki to wake up to every day, so he's living large.
Yeah, some guys get all the luck.
Say that again?
They're from Milan. They're Italian.
There you go. Well, the first metal band from Italy that actually sounds good.
Hey.
Woo! They're from Milan, huh?
Yeah.
I think that is a groundbreaking moment. The reason why I say that is, for the most part, the great bands, whether they're metal or not, have been American, Australian, British, possibly German. You know, years ago, Scandinavia with golden earring bands like that. But I had never heard of a band out of Italy, or Spain, or France, especially.
Yeah, France, man. France don't do nothing.
I was in Paris, I don't know how long ago, back when I could afford it. And anyway...
Yeah, back when you had money.
Right, back when I had money. And I saw some French hip-hop on TV. And...
Did it suck?
Pretty much, yeah. Really angry street French kids. Just goes, you know, just pissed off and all French talk. Okay.
French talk. That's a hot one.
All right. So there you go. That's Lacuna Coil from Italia. All right.
Male-fronted band to co-headline Ozfest.
Are they fronted by a girl?
Yep.
Because the lead singer in that song is definitely, unless that's a chick singing, I'm kidding. Well, that's very interesting. I wonder what their influences. Does it say who their influences are?
No, I'll have to read some more about it.
What, does it make you feel inferior?
Well, I think it's a little frightening.
Why?
Well, where is... General, you said it best.
Yeah, I was going to say, where does Italy get off? Where do they get off all of a sudden having these good bands?
I don't know. I mean...
You know, Italy was always they were always a laugh a minute. Now all of a sudden they're getting serious on us.
Italy was a laugh a minute. I have a friend of mine who's from Italy, Alice Carbone, a writer.
Oh, I've seen her on Twitter.
Yeah, Alice is great, and she interviewed me for her blog, and she has just signed a book deal, so she's kicking ass, man. And she wrote for years for an Italian magazine. It was like an Italian magazine, only it was, you know what I'm saying?
Like Vogue?
Yeah, it was like a magazine like Vogue, where they have the European brands of it. And she was a correspondent here in the States and wrote for them. And she has since settled here in the United States because it's kind of her adopted country, America. She has a great affection for America and lives here now and lives in Los Angeles and writes and just got a book deal. And as I said... But she's an Italian, and I think she's from Milan. So maybe she's seen this band.
Maybe she was in a band.
Maybe that's her singing. Alice, is that you? All right. So anyway, rest in peace, Harold Ramis. Very interesting. I could read about him forever, and we still probably would not know the great influence that he had. Rest in peace, sir, and thank you very much for what you gave us.
Does that scare you? He was how old?
69.
Well, you're
getting up there, Mr. Henry. You won't be long now.
Won't be long now what? Until I'm dead?
Well...
You know, Bud, it might not be very long for you either. You don't know. You ride a motorcycle around, and you got a big fat hole in your head.
Well, I'm not going to die.
The way you ride that bike? General Shaw's right. You got a hole in your head from the way you ride your motorcycle, man. You're lucky you survived that. You ain't going to die.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, man. You're lucky you're walking around. You're sitting here telling us about stuff, man. You got a freaking hole in your head. All right, let's check out this one here, man. This is a story. Carl Icahn is targeting both eBay and the clubby nature of Silicon Valley. The activist investor's latest rant takes aim at board conflicts at the online auctioneer of eBay as he agitates for a spinoff of its PayPal business. But Mr. Icahn is taking on a culture bigger than just eBay. He notes that eBay director Mark Anderson's venture capital firm has invested in 5 competitors of the company, more unsettling at least on their face are profitable investments Anderson Horowitz made in 2 businesses that eBay sold. It was, for example, among buyers that paid $2.75 billion for Skype in 2009, selling it to Microscope for $8.5 billion less than 2 years later. Wow.
Well, there's a profit.
How do you like that, man? They bought Skype for almost $3 billion and sold it for $8.5 billion 2 years later. You talk about flip. You want to flip something? How about that? Yet overlaps of this kind are endemic in the Silicon Valley, and Mr. Anderson's appeal is a bit like Goldman Sachs' clout on Wall Street. The whole point of having him on side is the knowledge he derives from the multiple hats that he wears. Well, basically, what this guy Icahn was saying is that, there's a lot of hands, one hand washing the other, man, there's a whole lot of hands washing other hands there in the Silicon Valley. This may be genuinely useful for a company like Facebook, where he's also a director. And since Mark Zuckerberg has voting control, board conflicts are more or less beside the point. On the other hand, Mr. Anderson's skills and Rolodex don't seem to have helped much of Hewlett-Packard's boardroom. I don't know, what is all this about?
Well, what he's saying is, there are a lot of people in Silicon Valley that have a hand in a lot of different companies. And so here we have continuing reverberation of...
Margaret, you don't know what you're talking about.
I know more than you clowns do. The monopoly mindset.
You mean one guy or one entity controlling a bunch of others?
Yes.
Well, there's no question about that. See, it's so big now that... It's like what I was saying about what's his name? Snowden, you know? I mean, what's the point here? Do we really... Unless we start attacking the real target that if you take it down, you actually have... You've made some progress, you know, you're pounding it, man. To say that Snowden is somehow doing the good work, you know, is to say that Snowden is somehow fighting the good fight is missing the bigger picture. The bigger picture is he's now become a predictable pawn in a larger game, and that is the game of geopolitics. That's the game of world power versus world power. A man alone is nothing compared to that. And he will say and do what they want him to say and do. Right now he's saying and doing what Russia wants him to say and do. But Russia will eventually get tired of him. They'll be able to get something for him. Well, the same thing here with these companies, you know? Same thing with these companies. One day, the guy's speaking some language on behalf of, Microsoft. The next day, he's talking for Skype. One day, this guy is going to war on behalf of PayPal and eBay. And the next day, he's, you know, got a million and one different things. So it isn't the company. It's the real power of the principles when it comes to this kind of thing.
That's not like America and Russia.
No, America and Russia are the power when it comes to politics. But when it comes to Wall Street, the Silicon Valley, and money, it's the individual, not the company. That's what he's saying. These are individuals. You know, Mark Zuckerberg holds voting control on the board at Facebook. He has voting control. So whatever. He says, Mr. Anderson's appeal is like Goldman Sachs on Wall Street. The whole point of having him on side is the knowledge he derives from the multiple hats that he wears. He wears all kinds of hats. He does all kinds of jobs. He's got all kinds of information. So Icahn is trying to persuade tech companies that plugged-in directors are a bad thing. There may even be an upside for him in Mr. Anderson's continued presence at eBay if the venture capitalists can be persuaded of the merits of offloading PayPal. Having such a big name deal maker on eBay's board could help the activist's wish come true. He could actually be, you know, he could actually be controlling PayPal or controlling eBay. But he's saying that these guys who are plugged in, with all these other different companies are not necessarily working on behalf of you. Oh, you know, get this guy on the board because...
Do you even understand what you're saying?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're all talking about stuff.
Well, I'm finding my way.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I'm finding my way. But Ted Bell is the reason why we do these topics, because eventually we can get Ted on here, and he can talk all kinds of smack about all kinds of things, as he will right now. Ted Bell at Ted's of Beverly Hills.
Ted of Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
Hey, come on down here to Ted's of Beverly Hills. Phil, glad to do it for you. Glad to explain the world of money, because I'm Ted Bell, and not that I'm rich, but I'm richer than anybody I'm talking to on this show. I'll tell you that.
You
and also, Phil, one of the things, you know, I didn't mention to you that when you talk about venture capital, what the hell...
God, bud, you're gonna—I'm gonna start bleeding from the ears and the nose.
What the hell was that?
That was nothing.
God.
You all right?
Hold on for a minute. Give me some chewing gum, will you? Give me some chewing gum.
What are you?
My ears just about. All right, speaking of venture capital, Phil, we were spending a good part of today trying to raise money for an Olympic film, the Sochi Olympics, and because we wanted to celebrate in much the same way, you know, this guy, there's a guy that I don't personally, Bud Greenspan. I know that Bud Greenspan means well, but every time I've ever seen that guy on television with the glasses on top of his head, I have said I'm going to take him down. I don't know how. I don't know when. Is he still alive?
Bud Greenspan? I don't know.
Because I'd hate to be saying this, knowing that the guy is well, even if he's passed on, you know, Mr. Greenspan, all due respect, but you with the glasses on your head. And so, because it's a signature, and I recognize that being Ted Bell, owning Ted's of Beverly Hills, having that steakhouse is good, and having the billboard, I'm Ted Bell, all of the accoutrements, all of the things that say I'm Ted Bell, it ain't good enough when you've got a television show, a couple of movies, and you've got glasses on your bald head, and you're staring into the camera very thoughtfully and saying, well, you know, I'm so busy and I'm always working. That's what the glasses on the head thing says. And you got to know that that guy wasn't working 24/7. I bet you that guy was spending most of the time kicking it on a chaise lounge out by a pool. God knows who was bringing him drinks, boy, girl. I don't know. I don't want to think, and I wouldn't want to speculate.
Okay, so where are we going here?
Where are we going here? Here's where we're going. I would like to have my own signature. I would like to have my own signature piece, my own signature statement on the Olympics. I think this is a way for Ted Bell to make his presence and his great love of sport known. The thing that I immediately thought about, because Greenspan has the glasses on top of the head, is I wanted to have a cigarette in my ear. And so, to that end, I don't hear anybody. Does anybody react?
What's that, Ted?
Are you there, Phil?
I'm right here, yeah.
No, all right. I just got told no one reacted to that. All right.
Reacted to what?
I want to have a cigarette in my ear. So when they're interviewing me, I've got a cigarette in my ear.
So you've got a cigarette in your ear, so what?
So I've got a cigarette in my ear, so what? I've got a cigarette in my ear. Never mind.
Is that your signature statement, like Bud Greenspan?
Yes. Bud Greenspan had the glasses on the head. I have a cigarette in my ear.
Is it sticking out of your ear?
Oh, man.
No, Bud. He's got it. It's in the groove of the ear.
Right, where you'd put a pencil.
Oh, I don't know.
What do you mean sticking out of my ear? Why do you let him make those statements? Because right now you've got people going, ha, 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 ha. He's so funny.
Ted, look, you mentioned having a cigarette in your ear, and Bud's not familiar with that.
Oh, the hell he's not. You've never put a cigarette in your ear.
No. Not inside my ear.
Well, you put it in the slot of your ear.
That's when I put it in the slot of my ear. If a guy says, where do you put the cigarette? I go in the ear slot.
In the ear slot.
Yeah, see, even Phil thinks that sounds stupid.
All right, so you've got a cigarette in your ear. We didn't react. I'm sorry.
All right, well, but we're not going to. You know, I'm not going to belabor the point. I'm not going to have a cigarette sticking in my ear if it doesn't. If it does not give me that. If it's not a signature look, I need something so that when I finally do get on television to talk about the Olympics with the Olympic film that we're planning to make, that we got the funding for. Oh God, am I tired? You know?
So you were out all day today trying to get money up for an Olympic film.
Yeah, well, we got some raw footage shot. We've also got some stock footage. It's really more or less a vanity piece for me, Phil. Something that I can see on ESPN or roll on ESPN Classic so that I am there and I have the cigarette in the ear and I'm speaking in a way that, you know, it gives people an opportunity not just to look at Bud Greenspan. That's all I'm saying.
So this is a, your effort here is to simply give people, do we need to break, Nikki?
Are you talking to me?
No, I'm talking.
After.
We need to break, don't we?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Who are you talking to?
I'm talking to my producer. I'm talking to Nikki at the studio. We have to break, okay?
Well, but you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, you are trying to take down Bud Greenspan.
I'm not trying to take him down. No, I'm not. I'm trying to give people an alternative to the Bud Greenspan.
Bud Greenspan.
Bud Greenspan with the glasses on top of the head, that's all.
So you think you're going to do that with a cigarette in your ear?
Well, apparently not, because I got one knucklehead that thinks it's sticking out of my ear, and you think it looks gay. So...
I didn't use the word gay. Let's take a very quick break here. Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills talking about raising money, venture capital to do things. His idea... Let's make a movie about the 2014 Olympics in Sochi and at the same time give people an alternative to Bud Greenspan's glasses on his head. I don't know. We'll be right back. The world famous...
Well, Phil, if you think it sounds weird, get rid of this guy.
It's weird. World famous Phil Hendry Show. World famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. What?
What in the name of hell?
What do you call that?
It's a band called O Sleeper.
What do you say?
It's a band called O Sleeper.
Well, you can't, I don't give a damn where you live, I don't care what planet, you can't call that singing.
Yeah, it's of course it's singing.
Oh, my God.
I bet you Jason J. Delmonico's listening to this right now.
Well, what is wrong? Why is he angry? What are you laughing at?
I don't know. The guy's just singing.
If you call that singing, Phil, then I have a penis.
Well, you know.
How dare you?
Hey, turn it down, will you, man? It's just making everybody insane.
That music caused a violent reaction to that woman.
I'll kick his ass.
Hey, watch it, will you? What are you so upset about?
You heard what he said.
Margaret, you led right into that, man. Talk about teeing it up.
Yeah, you said if that's singing, I have a penis.
Yes.
They're a Christian band.
Okay, you weren't on the air. You want to say that again?
They're a Christian band.
If they're Christian, then I just had a vagina installed.
If that's a Christian band, then Jesus is being nailed to a cross yet again as we speak.
That's a Christian band, huh? You are no more the face you paid to the Boston police. I think somewhere along the line, man, they lost the faith. Nah, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I like them. I love it all, man. And I love it now. That's because I use drugs. All right.
Do you really?
No, I do not.
Yeah, you do. You said you smoke weed to help you sleep.
Yeah, I heard. They're a Christian band. Well, what is this? What does that mean, a Christian band? What does that mean, Nikki? When you say a Christian band, what's that mean?
They started out as a Christian band. They actually say that they... Basically, everything they do is characterized by a Christian motivation.
Yeah, I know.
That's
but,
a quote.
Okay, but what is that? What? Oh, huh?
They believe in God and they perform their music for the sake of God.
Well, see, a lot of people believe in God and a lot of people are Christians.
But they sing about God.
That song was about God. Well, okay. I mean, that's cool. I mean, I can't
understand the lyrics, so I can't comment on that.
There's nothing wrong with, you know, you can, I mean, that's fine, you know.
It looks like they've had some member changes, so they don't necessarily fall under that umbrella anymore, yeah, but they still say that they're motivated by Christianity.
I think some Satanists got into the band, Derek. This is one called Death From Above. This is a great song.
Do they start in with a caterwauling again? That was god-awful and wretched.
You know, if that's a Christian band, then I also had a vagina installed.
You're going to get your ass kicked. Here he is again. Here's our friend again. Now, what verse of the Bible is that? God. Another thing I
want to
say.
There's a lot of heavy metal Christian bands.
Yeah, I know that.
I have to get you a list.
I know that. I know there's a lot of them. No, metal is not characterized any longer by this umbrella belief that there's some devil influence, you know. But I'll tell you one thing about so-called metal. It's more and more sounding like traditional rock and roll to me. In other words, it doesn't sound so much like heavy metal as it sounds just like good rock and roll, although really polished and professional and obviously very, very well produced now, too, you know?
Yeah.
Because we're a long way from War Pigs. Or, if you will... Yeah. All right, guys, thank you very much. We'll see you tomorrow night. And remember, the 15th, we go to a 9 a.m. start time. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
1.